Good morning. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 2nd meeting of the Minnesota House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please take the roll?
Chair Gavney.
Present.
Vice Chair Stansted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt is excused but should be joining us later. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
And Representative Joachim.
Present.
That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Thank you, members. Who am I going to pick on today? Representative Bennett, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, February 25th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Bennett motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the Thursday, February 25th minutes of the committee, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bennett. Today, members in committee, the Office of the Legislative Auditor is releasing their evaluation of the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program. We'll be hearing from a handful of staff from the auditor's office who worked on the report. We'll take questions, and then we'll hear briefly from Ms. Bailey from Pelsby and take questions. The Q programs, or the QGMIC programs as they got renamed a few years ago, have been around as a strategy to increase teachers of color in Minnesota for many years. They've gone through some changes in just the last half dozen years or so, and this report was an opportunity for we as the legislature, using the legislative auditor as our tool, to review the programs, assess their impact and their administration, all as part of our commitment to work around increasing the number of teachers of color in the state. With that, I'll turn it over to the experts. I've got Judy Munoz-Rodriguez on my list as presenting, and Judy Randall. Whomever is first, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Thank you to the Judys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. And I really want to thank you for taking the time in what I know is a busy and very unusual session to hear from us about our evaluation on the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Program. And as Mr. Chair said, it's kind of a mouthful. So we use the acronym CUGMEC is how we pronounce it to refer to the program. You know, this session, I've watched the committee spend a lot of time discussing different proposals to increase the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota's classrooms. And you've heard a lot of testimony about the different programs the state has implemented to increase the diversity of the teacher workforce. So our evaluation focused on one of those programs, CUGMEC. And understandably, you want to know whether CUGMEC is, and I'm doing air quotes, working. And what you're going to hear from us today is, unfortunately, it's difficult to determine how well the program is working for a number of reasons. But one of the main reasons is because the purpose of the program is not clear. CUGMEC, as Mr. Chair said, is a grant program where PELSBY, the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, yes, by the way, this is a report full of mouthful names and acronyms, so we use them, we shorten them as much as we can. So CUGMEC is a grant program where PELSBY awards grants to higher education institutions to increase the number of teacher candidates of color or who are American Indian and who meet certain licensing requirements. I just want to repeat that because this is what it says in law. It's to increase the number of teacher candidates of color or who are American Indian and who meet certain licensing requirements. So conceivably, the program is intended to increase the number of people of color or American Indians who enroll in a teacher preparation program. But it could also be intended to help those teacher candidates who are already in a teacher prep program complete the program. It could also be used to help those folks get their license, get a teaching job, or even conceivably remain in the classroom as a teacher. So without some more direction from the legislature, we think it's going to continue to be difficult to measure the impact of the program. Further, as you know, because I know this committee has dug in deep on this topic, the state has a number of different programs with similar and kind of overlapping purposes focused on trying to diversify Minnesota's teacher workforce. And we think it's really important as the legislature and really this committee in particular grapples with the purpose of the program to think about it in the context of all these other programs the state has and to develop a strategy that allows these different programs to complement each other. You know, maybe they're going to all focus on the whole spectrum of becoming a teacher. Maybe you want certain programs to focus on certain aspects along that pathway of becoming a teacher. This is kind of some of the hard work that we think you all need to do to think about how you best want to use the CUGMEC grant program. In addition to talking about the purpose and the focus of the program, we also looked at how PELSBY administered the grant program and how grantee institutions use the funds. So for now, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn to Ms. Rodriguez, who was the manager of our evaluation, and she'll provide you more of those details and the nitty-gritty behind our findings and recommendations. And again, thank you very much for making time for this today.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. I appreciate that. Ms. Rodriguez.
Good morning. I am just going to share my screen really quickly.
Thank you. And if you could introduce yourself the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. For the record, my name is Jody Rodriguez, and I'm with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And before I get started, I also just wanted to acknowledge the other members of my evaluation team, who were Will Harrison and Catherine Tyson. So as I'm sure the committee is aware, Minnesota's teacher workforce is significantly less racially and ethnically diverse than its student population. And as Ms. Randall said, CUGMEC is one of several programs in Minnesota that may help address this disparity. We had two main research questions, as you alluded to. One of them was what has been CUGMEC's impact, and the other was how well has PELSBY administered the program? So as Ms. Randall was noting, unfortunately, the answer to the first question isn't simple. It's very difficult to measure the program's impact. As for the second question, we would note that PELSBY has generally managed the program well. We also determined that the focus of the program was unclear. And I'll provide a little bit more information about these findings and some related recommendations, but first I wanted to provide the committee with a little bit of context. So Minnesota has some of the nation's largest educational achievement gaps based on student race and ethnicity. And as we just noted, it also has a teacher workforce that's significantly less diverse than its student population. Data for the 2018-19 school year shows that about 34% of public school students were people of color or American Indian, while the same was true for only about 5% of teachers. Now, we looked at data closely for the K-12 students and teachers to see whether this disparity existed across the state, and we found that it overwhelmingly did. If you have the PDF of our report in front of you, I'm going to be kind of giving you a few page references if you're interested in looking at them. One of them is Appendix B in our report, which is where we provide a map with more details on our analysis of teacher and student diversity by school district. As we mentioned, CUGMEC is one program in Minnesota that may help address this disparity. Pelsby is the administrator of the program, and it must award grants to higher education institutions to increase the number of teacher candidates of color or who are American Indian and who meet certain licensing requirements. Eligibility is limited to institutions of higher education with Pelsby-approved teacher preparation programs. And we have a list of higher education institutions with approved licensure programs in Appendix A of the full report. Now to just run you through a little bit of the history. CUGMEC was established in 1997 appropriations law as the Collaborative Urban Educator Grant Program. It was previously provided to a small group of private higher education institutions that were named most year in law. That changed for fiscal year 2018 when the legislature changed the name of the program to CUGMEC. And it also both named four institutions in law to receive grants, but also mandated that a portion of the funding be awarded competitively. By fiscal year 2020, the legislature mandated that all funding be awarded through a competitive process, and it also moved administration of the program from the Minnesota Department of Education, who had previously administered the program, over to Pelsby. The legislature has appropriated an average of about $990,000 each year for the last five fiscal years. And as I noted, in fiscal years 2016 and 17, there were four grantees. That increased when the program became partially competitive to nine in fiscal years 2018 and 19. As this slide shows, for the last 5 years, grantee institutions have spent an increasing percentage of CUGMEC grant funding on direct financial assistance to teacher candidates for things like tuition, books, and exam fees. This percentage reached a high of 86% of expenditures in fiscal year 2020, and it corresponded with a decrease in expenditures on salaries for things like administration, academic advising, and other supports. So again, we looked at how we could evaluate and measure the impact of the program as a whole. Each grantee institution has reported on its individual metrics, so we focused on analyzing metrics across the board to try and get a picture of the CUGMEC program as a whole. Again, we found that difficult. So as we pointed out, there have been several recent changes to the program, and it's really too soon to know what kind of impact some of those changes will have. Some grantees have received funds for only a couple of years, and they can spend those funds over a period of several years. Even without those changes, measuring the program's impact would still be difficult. As we explain more fully later, the program's focus isn't clear. We also lack certain necessary data to really measure the program's impact. In addition, grantees have provided a variety of supports and amounts of financial assistance using CUGMEC. So for example, according to our analysis of grantee data, institutions provided individual beneficiaries with direct financial assistance that range from less than $100 per beneficiary to tens of thousands of dollars. And it sometimes included mentoring, test preparation assistance, or other supports. Also, grantee institutions we spoke with reported supporting candidates with funding other than CUGMEC. So taking all of these things together, we really couldn't isolate the impact of just the CUGMEC grant program. But at the same time, we did request data on beneficiaries from the nine grantee institutions that received CUGMEC grants through fiscal years 2020 in order to provide some information on outcome measures for the beneficiaries from those institutions. The institutions reported assisting 590 teacher candidates in fiscal years 16 through 20, and the majority, 85%, had either graduated by July 2020 or were enrolled in classes in 2020, indicating that they were likely still pursuing their degrees. We noted that 7% had neither graduated or withdrawn, but they also had not enrolled in classes in 2020, so it was unclear whether they may return to their studies. And 8% had withdrawn. Grantee institutions indicated that 171 beneficiaries graduated between fiscal years 16 and 19. And we matched the data we received on those beneficiaries to Pelsby's licensing and employment data. And based on that analysis, we found that 67% of those graduates had obtained a standard teaching license, which we defined as a tier 3 or tier 4 in the tiered system, by July 2020. And another 20% had obtained limited license, which would have been tier 1 or 2. We also found that almost 3/4 of those graduates had been employed as a licensed Minnesota public school teacher as of the 1920 school year. And you can see in Chapter 2, we have a lot more information about the data that we used for this analysis. In addition to reviewing data, we spoke with a few beneficiaries, and we also surveyed CUGMIC beneficiaries that received tuition scholarships in fiscal year 2020. We asked beneficiaries to what extent their teacher preparation programs had provided sufficient support to complete their programs, and 85% responded that they had provided most or all of the support they needed. We also asked how helpful certain services or supports were, and the highest percentage of respondents said that financial assistance with tuition was extremely helpful. You can see more information about responses to that question in Exhibit 2.6 on page 31 of our full report. Just as an example, one beneficiary had noted how encouraging the financial assistance they received was. Other beneficiaries also highlighted the importance of supportive faculty members, advisors, assistance with test preparation, and other supports. So in addition to reviewing beneficiary data, we also analyzed Pelsby's data on race and ethnicity of the teacher workforce in school years 2015-16 through 19-20. And we found several issues with this data. These included that Pelsby didn't require districts to collect data in a uniform manner. Districts may make entry errors when they're inputting the data. And there are changes that happened to the licensing and employment data systems that appear to have resulted in some errors. So we actually determined that the 2019-20 data was not reliable for us to report in a trend analysis. So just to give you one example of some of the issues we found, one large school district reported the race of more than 2,700 teachers differently in the 1920 school year than they had in the 1819 school year. And as a result, we have a recommendation for Pelsby to standardize and improve the processes and systems they use to collect data on teacher candidates and licensed teachers' race and ethnicity. We think that'll be important to have reliable data to accurately track changes in the teacher workforce. Nevertheless, we did review data for school years 15-16 through 18-19, which we determined were at least consistent enough to report, and found that there was a slight increase of about a half a percentage point across the 4 years in teachers who were people of color or American Indian. We also found that there were about 300 or fewer newly licensed teachers of color or American Indian teachers who graduated from Minnesota programs hired each year. So in addition to looking at CUGMIC programs' impact, we reviewed Pelsby's administration of it. Now, as I mentioned previously, the legislature moved administration of CUGMIC from NDE to Pelsby, starting with fiscal year 2020 grants. And Pelsby had a short period of time in which to award those 2020 grants. They took over administration in July of 2019 and had to make awards by mid-September. But we noted in a report that they did consult with NDE, with the Office of Higher Education, and with several other stakeholders in creating its award process. And that included putting together a group of outside reviewers to review grant applications. In both of those years, fiscal years 20 and 21, Pelsby received requests for funding that far exceeded the amount that was available. So for example, in fiscal year 21, 12 applicants requested a total of $2.7 million, while Pelsby awarded a total of $970,000 to 8 applicants. So that means total awards represented 35% of the total funding requested. And even institutions that were awarded grants received less funding than they had requested. In reviewing Pelsby's award process, we found that it met most requirements. The Office of Grants Management publishes policies for grant award processes, and Pelsby complied with nearly all of those policies that we reviewed. In addition, statutes require Pelsby to adhere to numerous criteria when awarding PubMed grants. If you want to take a look at Exhibit 3.5 on page 55 of our full report, you'll see that Pelsby met nearly all of these requirements. One example is that they are required to award grants based on criteria that include the number of teacher candidates supported by the applicant who are people of color or American Indian. They also must look at graduation rates at applicant institutions. And we found that Pelsby included these criteria both in the application templates the applicants were required to use, as well as the scoring rubrics that grant applicant reviewers use to score the applications. However, we'll note that Pelsby did not include a couple of things. For example, they did not have information specifically on how institutions would sustain support for candidates. So we have a recommendation for Pelsby to ensure that their CUGMIC grant applications and scoring rubrics incorporate all required information. In reviewing the award process, we also concluded it was generally transparent, but that some of the aspects of it lack clarity. So for example, we found that instructions for applicants improved from fiscal year 20 to 21, but there were still some certain instructions that remained unclear. One of them was instructions to applicants for reporting certain data. So we reviewed all applications for fiscal years 20 and 21, and we found that some of the data that was submitted by applicants in both years wasn't comparable across the institutions. For example, some applicants varied in how they calculated and reported program completion, licensure, or job placement rates, which may indicate that there was some lack of clarity there. In addition, while we show in Exhibit 3.4 on page 52 of the full report, Pelsby's instructions to reviewers improved from one year to the next, but some of them were still a little bit unclear. So as an example, reviewers were required to provide one score based on six different data points, and it was unclear how reviewers were expected to score this criterion if each of the data points was not similar. So this led to two more recommendations for Pelsby. One is that they should specify in their grant application instructions how applicants should report data. Without specifying this, the data that applicants provide may not be comparable, and that means reviewers could be determining scores based on differences in how institutions report the data rather than actual differences in program outcomes. We also recommend that Pelsby provide clear instructions on how to calculate scores related to all criteria in the application scoring rubric. This, we think, will help provide consistency to reviewers' scores. So the last thing I'll talk about is just a little bit about the program's design. So prior to the program's codification in 2019, appropriations laws did not clearly or consistently state the program's purpose. Codification provided some guidance, but with a little bit of uncertainty. Again, statutes state that grants must be awarded to increase the number of teacher candidates who are of color or American Indian, and it's unclear whether this signals an intention on the part of the legislature to focus CUGMIC funding on activities that would increase the number of candidates, which might be recruitment activities or scholarships, as opposed to activities further along the pathway to becoming a teacher, such as mentoring for new teachers. Another thing that I would note is that statutes and appropriations laws before them haven't indicated what types of activities can be funded with CUGMIC grants. One thing we noted in looking at expenditures data was that CUGMIC was previously used for a variety of activities that included direct financial assistance to teacher candidates, but also included salaries for instructors and administrators, food for teacher candidate gatherings, and a variety of other things. But in the absence of legislative direction and with requests for more funding than was available, Pelsby prioritized funding for direct assistance in recent years. So for example, in fiscal year 2021, Pelsby awarded 93% of CUGMIC grant funding for direct financial assistance to teacher candidates. And then just one last thing I'll note is that As I noted earlier, PELSB has to adhere to many requirements when it's making cognitive awards, and there appears to be some tension among some of these requirements. So just as an example here, I note that PELSB must give preference to preference to past grantees, but they must also award grants to institutions located in various economic development regions throughout the state. Now, most of the previous grantees were located in the Twin Cities, and so it's unclear to us how PELSB might balance these requirements in a situation where there's limited funding. They have previous grantees that have demonstrated success, and PELSB receives a competitive application from institutions located in different economic development regions. Of course, one solution is to provide funding to both institutions in this hypothetical situation, but as the number of grantee institutions increases, the average award size decreases. So we have a few recommendations for the legislature. One is that the legislature clearly define the focus of the CUGMIC grant program. Two, that it outline how grant funding may be used and establish corresponding outcome measures. And three, that it review requirements for awarding grants. And then one last thing I'll note is that, and I believe you all know this, is that it will take a significant increase in the number of newly hired teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota to see a change in the composition of the teacher workforce in public schools. And as Ms. Randall noted, Minnesota has several programs that could be used to diversify the teaching workforce. And we summarize some of the key aspects of some of those programs in Appendix C of our report. So as the legislature makes decisions related to CUGMIC, we believe it should determine how CUGMIC fits into Minnesota's overall efforts to increase the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. And with that, I have concluded my presentation, and I would be happy to take questions along with Ms. Randall. And I think I'll take my screen share off.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez, for that overview of the research report. Just to put a bit of a point on it for members and for the public, this report was only released at 9 a.m., I believe it was. So we are not taking any public testimony today because, of course, the public has not had the opportunity to review the report, digest it, and come up with responses in that short a period of time. We are fully open to public testimony in response to this report at a future date. But we do have members with questions. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez, for your report. One question I had is, do we know how many of these teachers stay in Minnesota?
Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. We did take a look at retention. And so if you want to take a look, if you have your report in front of you, we have a graph on page 29 where we looked at retention of teachers. Now, this is only, we focused on 2016 through 2020. So this is only going back a few years. But what we found is for teachers that had started working in Minnesota prior to 2016, there was a retention rate of about 27, that started working in 2016 or after. There was a retention rate of 78% for those teachers. So we only have data on public school teachers, but again, we found that about three quarters of the beneficiaries were working in Minnesota in public schools and a retention rate of over 70%.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rodriguez. Ms. Rodriguez, is there anything in the program or in law around this program that serves as a contingency that says, okay, if we give you money for your education, you're going to actually teach in Minnesota for a particular period of time?
Ms. Rodriguez.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, not in law.
Representative Drazkowski.
Might be an area to explore. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this report, Deputy Dodger. Deputy Auditor, it's a harder word to say than I thought it would be, Rodriguez, for this report. It strikes me that 2020 would be a difficult year to gather data on higher education, which in a lot of ways there are a lot of higher education implications for this. So what effects did the pandemic have on the data around grantees? So for example, did grantees stop taking classes or pause their education because of the pandemic? And then the other question I had is, as a result, do our applicants need more or less support as a result? And that could be both financial. I know Q or QMIC also does quite a bit of academic support as well. So was this a difficult year to gather data? Is it actually representative? And how has the pandemic really changed what our applicants need? There's a lot there.
And Representative Jordan, that was that directed towards Ms. Rodriguez or Ms. Randall?
Ms. Rodriguez.
Okay, Ms. Rodriguez.
Ms. Randall, and if Ms. Randall has something to add too, I would welcome her feedback as well.
Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I'll note that we started our data collection in the spring. And so to the extent that the pandemic affected the data that we were collecting, I don't think that it necessarily affected that data. Most of that was already kind of in the works of getting reported prior to the pandemic. And I would say that perhaps Pelsby or the institution themselves could tell you a little bit more about how the supports that individuals need has changed through this. As I noted, we did speak with some beneficiaries and we did survey beneficiaries this summer. And we focused a little bit more broadly on overall what is helpful for you. We did hear some, you know, more pointed things that had to do with pandemic, things like we need more access to technology. You know, we need more places that we can go if we're not able to access it in our homes. So we did hear a little bit about that, but I think that we started some of that research closer to the beginning, and I would say that now, you know, you may get different answers. I don't know if Ms. Randall wants to weigh in.
Ms. Randall, do you want in on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think Ms. Rodriguez covered it well. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Jordan?
No, that was very helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all your work on this. This is great.
Thank you. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the Office of the Legislative Auditor for what I think is quite a thorough analysis of our CUGMIC grant program as it has evolved over the years. But you know, this grant program is another example of how as we add and subtract to whether it's a grant program or statute, that we can mess things up royally as legislators. So we need to refocus, and I think this program actually needs an overhaul. But on the other hand, looking at Exhibit C1, to which Ms. Rodriguez referred, we have $81.5 million that we spend on achievement and integration. And as pointed out in her description, you know, this is really a place where we should have a complement, because school districts can use the revenue for recruitment, retention, and hiring incentives or additional compensation to increase our racial and ethnic diversity of teachers and administrators. Another is the Grow Your Own. Although we spend $1.5 million on that, we have a much better record, or I should say maybe data collection, for what happens with those candidates who go through that program. So I would suggest, you know, we have a refocusing on Grow Your Own. And finally, we have the QComp program. Now, I know not all school districts have the alternative teacher professional pay system that we call QComp, but it also provides hiring bonuses for teachers working in high need or hard to fill positions, and helps also fund the Grow Your Own program. So I think we need to analyze what this report is telling us and refocus our energies, because I think we're going to do a much more directed approach to increasing our teachers of color and American Indian teachers if we zero in on programs that we know provide more funding at the local level, rather than perhaps sending out these grants when it is really hard to collect the data and to ensure that we have fulfilled our requirements. And then finally, you know, let's not keep changing something that's not working. Let's make it work. So let's think of prudent changes if we're going to continue with this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I agree that the changes of the last few years have added a vagueness to the program. It's lost its focus. What was, I think, probably a more functional program before the changes of the last few years. So thank you for raising that. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I haven't really had a chance to digest the report yet, but I do appreciate the presentation. And I just had a quick few questions just so that I heard things right. In 2021, 93% of the expenditures went to financial support for students. Was that correct?
Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes, it was awarded for direct financial assistance to teacher candidates.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I thought. I think that's pretty amazing. And the fact that they received, as always, way more requests than they could grant, and that they could only grant about 35% of the requests that came in. So to me, that shows that it's a program that people are wanting and that there's a lot of requests for it, and that maybe our funding has not kept up with the need that's out there. And while I think maybe we do need to, I'm glad Chair Dabney brought this up, and I'm very happy and I'm excited to read the OLA report. Well, excited in a Minnesota word, I guess. But I always believe in re-looking at what we're doing. But I would also want to say a sense of caution. Just like we talk about having alternative pathways for teachers and having different tools in the toolbox, all the programs that have been mentioned have different sets of folks that they reach. Our Grow Your Own programs are folks that are already invested in working in our schools a lot of the times as paras. This has more of a higher ed approach for folks that want to take that pathway. QComps are encouraging teachers and retaining teachers. So I think it would be good for us to kind of look at how these all work together. And to me, this shows, too, with the QComp, looking at that need that's out there, that maybe we should be putting a little bit more investment into it as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. At this point, members, I'd like to transition to a response from Pelsby. Ms. Bailey is here representing that agency. Ms. Bailey, would you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair Dabney, members of the committee, and thank you for having me. My name is Elena Bailey, and I'm the Director of Education Policy for the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. I think first, before anything, we want to thank the Office of the Legislative Auditor for its thorough evaluation of this grant program, and we really appreciate the opportunity to highlight some of those findings here today. I'd like to start by just giving an overview, a brief overview, of how the grant was administered by Pelsby over the past 2 years, before discussing a few kind of key recommendations from the OLA's report. So the CUGMIC grant program, as you mentioned, has existed in some form for over 20 years and was transferred to Pelsby in 2019. Pelsby entered an interagency agreement with the Office of Higher Education to help administer the CUGMIC grant. And with their guidance, Pelsby put together a team of reviewers by reaching out to various stakeholders. The reviewers were comprised of current and former teachers, as well as 1 to 2 state employees from other agencies. And these reviewers hailed from both the metro area and greater Minnesota. Some of the reviewers had worked with or for teacher preparation providers in the past, and additionally, the majority of reviewers were educators of color themselves. In fiscal year 2020, as was mentioned earlier, applicants requested just under $2.3 million, while Pelsby had just over $1 million to award. While the 2020 grant funding supported over 337 teacher candidates of color and indigenous teacher candidates, Grantees who had historically used these funds to cover program and administrative costs expressed some concern about the choice to emphasize program costs related to direct candidate support. So Paulsby staff took the next several months to meet and discuss these concerns with grant applicants, legislators, and other stakeholders. The result of this dialogue was a revised, more detailed rubric, and these adjustments were incorporated into the review of fiscal year 2021 proposals. The fiscal year 21 process was similar to the fiscal year 20 process, with a few notable exceptions. The application cycle took place in the spring to accommodate academic planning and recruitment needs for the use of funds in that fall. The rubric was significantly revised to provide more detail, and as in 2020, the rubric was included in the RFP so that applicants had access to that. Reviewers were also invited to attend a public Paulsby committee meeting where grantees presented about their programs and the work being done with these grant funds. And that was based on a request from grantees that potential reviewers had a better understanding of the programs themselves and the way that the funds were helping support their work. And then finally, Paulsby also conducted site visits to grantees to get a better understanding of the programs so we could communicate those operations to reviewers. In fiscal year 2021, applicants requested just over $2.7 million, but in that year, there was only $970,000 to administer. So overall, this process has been one of collaboration and continuous improvement, which is why we are so appreciative of the OLA's thorough evaluation and specific feedback. Paulsby fully supports the findings and recommendations of this report. While we welcome the opportunity to administer this grant, particularly because it aligns with Paulsby's mission as an agency, this was also Paulsby's first grant program. Contracting with the Office of Higher Education and receiving guidance from the Office of Grants Management was extremely helpful. Still, Paulsby agrees that even more work can be done. If this grant program continues to be funded in the next biennium, Paulsby will ensure to make the noted enhancements in the OLA report to the grant application and scoring rubric. Additionally, Paulsby agrees with the report's findings that its data systems, that are data systems, can and should be improved. While staff and board members have worked to build a data system that can provide policymakers with clear, useful data on licensed educators, this report highlights the limitations of our current data system and the effects of those limitations on our ability to understand the impact of this grant. We agree with the OLA's findings that there's a strong need for additional funds and staff to ensure this data becomes as accurate and standardized as possible. And then finally, will Paulsby work closely with stakeholders to ensure the focus of grant funds align to the intent of the authorizing statute? There has been ongoing confusion over the intent and prioritization of grant criteria. We agree with the OLA's recommendation that the legislature clarify the purpose and criteria of this grant program, as well as how the funding can be used. Overall, though, Paulsby encourages the legislature to continue investing in measures that help recruit, retain, and support teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, as Minnesota students deserve high-quality teachers that look like them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Any questions from members for Ms. Bailey? Seeing none, Representative Kreisha?
Yes, sir. Did I have my hand up?
Well, it's not clear. Would you like recognition?
I always like recognition in life, but for this question, no, I'm okay.
All right. Thank you very much, then, Representative Kreisha. Ms. Rodriguez, Ms. Randall, Ms. Bailey, thank you all for your presentation and response today. Members, the KUGMIC programs are part of the mosaic of strategies Representative Joachim outlined well that we implement as a state to try to increase the number of teachers of color in the state for all the obvious research-based reasons for why we need to do better on that. This is not the last day, I'm sure, that we'll be looking at this program and understanding how we can strengthen it and sharpen it, certainly taking in the legislative auditor's recommendations very seriously. So members, thank you all. Today, to the presenters again, thank you very much. With that, we stand adjourned.